Thanks, Nathan. What else?
Nice.
Sounds like it.
Now we'll date the tape. Today is Sunday, June the 30th, 1996. Greetings, Commander.
Good afternoon, and it's a good day.
Good.
I come in light, and our light is getting brighter. We go back a long way, friends and family. I should actually have asked Orma to bring a tape that we have around talking about Egypt, pyramids, and so forth, because you're going to find that the mysteries are not really mystical. They're extremely well programmed for understanding when the time of any cycle is relevant. I don't want to talk about those things that are a great mystery, because we still have our enemies, and these things come back in very weird form, and they're very painful. Not for me, because everybody has to come back into their understanding, regardless of who it might be, and names have never bothered me. They hurt the human element. And so once again, for this brief period before the meeting begins, I have to ask that Nora represent her position as secretary to the Phoenix Institute, and she can choose what needs to be added. We have enough people here from the board of advisors that we would have a quorum. There won't be any formal meeting, but everything needs to be documented. Rick has again received from Leon and Ann quite painful messages in rebuttal to almost everything that we said. Now, I don't find them on our subscription list or give them a paper list or shove them a paper, make them eat it list. Whatever force we might exert, I don't find us trying to stuff these papers down their throats. And they cannot seem to understand that once there is any action taking place, and it took place with the trip to Carson City to meet with George Green, that is where it began. Nobody is saying that Leon had any intent to be a conspirator at that visit. But George Green, before Leon was out of his driveway, had already called Florida and said that a car full of people, that included Leon Fort, Schreifers, and Bud Clark, had been there. And they were going to come back to Tehachapi and pull down that institute and the efforts. Now, that's what he said. We did not say that. In trying to find out what was going on, this was absolutely the road that was being taken with George Green and Horton at that time to pull the Institute into receivership, and by George Green's definition, forced bankruptcy and informal liquidation. I'm sorry Leon has felt the way he has felt. But the fact that George Abbott received, under false pretenses, knowing what he was doing, $40,000 of Institute money to pay to Leon Fort on his note, indicates that no matter what we did with Leon Fort or Infinite Balance today, Mr. Abbott has full authority under a right of attorney to take that money. He has already got liens against all assets of Leon Fort. should he get any funds to pay his legal bills. Leon cannot possibly understand this and continue in this argument. But I can't do anything about that. But it needs to be documented. I have written a little bit because this did not come to me. I do not control the paper. And if Rick and Ed and the staff want to take the time or have the inclination to run all of this, that's up to them. It is not up to me. But these things are things that have to be attended. Maybe, you see, I know that all the children are gone to the lake, and that's exactly where they ought to be. And Jean Dixon has gone with them so that Chris could participate in a little boating and swimming. And you'll be glad you didn't go because it is hotter than sin where they are. But they're young. And I guess a little cooking will tenderize them. I think that you have to know, and maybe EJ or someone else, Paul Lienthal possibly could maybe give us a little description of where we are so that Nora knows, and I can catch all of you up. Mr. Horton has, in the name of Green, Mr. Green, in other words, in the name of Horton, has forced another document onto the court for RICO charges and receivership and so forth. Now, he's not a member yet of the case, has no standing, and Mr. Horton does the paperwork, and he supplies these actually non-affidavits. And he demands immediate hearing, immediate trial, immediate. And he files one day short of the time expiration for being able to file, even though he's not a party. Mr. Abbott, on the other hand, being George Abbott, comes in 2 days late again, and he files a motion asking for an extension of time. Does anybody hear any contradiction in that, possibly? And it's his case. Well, the affidavits are not funny. And in view of what has happened this week with Mr. Entz or someone from the Entzes, is not funny. And maybe Charles could talk briefly about that, but I think I'll just tell it and get it on so we can move on. Someone about four nights ago, and this has been reported to the police, so it's not a figment of imagination. Someone came out and came up the field side, the road, the dirt road between the farm and the neighbor's farm. And nice tracks are right there and stop at the level of the irrigation system. Nice big footprint tracks all outside the door where the car stopped. Nice fingerprints and handprints and footprints all over, right over to the irrigation system and at the main valve that feeds the entire line, took a wrench and destroyed that part of the irrigation system. Now, vandalism is one thing. Revenge is something else. Unlawful acts or even something else. But when I said there was a calling card, there is an envelope that got scuffed out of the car or it blew out when the door was opened some way and was stepped on. But it's there. It's addressed to Sandy Entz. And its post date is 1996, May. So it could not have blown out there from the garbage bin. Anything picked up like that has to be considered as some kind of evidence. I think some bad mistakes are being made. And again, I don't know what to do about that. A meeting was called with the planners, the inspectors, the zoning person, Mitch Thresher is his name, I believe. Mitch Thresher, yes. And He's in a very bad position because Rod has made so many complaints, drawn him so many drawings. And then when he gets his inspectors out there, it isn't anything like Rod has presented to him. So it's being a very embarrassing set of circumstances. And the farm being a research and development project farm for the study of materials, block making, spelt hulls for insulation and block making, etc. There's a need for a mill. There's need for these things that are out there. And so far, the only things that they are finding really amiss are Mr. Turner's use of a small apartment that Gene was using, and also something about the septic system for the little mobile home that Tammy was using. So these are very hurtful, especially in a small town, and they have to be responded to, if nothing else, then in our minutes, please. So with that, I will subside. I believe that it should be kind of read into the record, this affidavit. There were two affidavits, actually. One just was accompanying a letter that Sherry Yount had sent to Doris, but I would like for Brent to retrieve the tape that was made that day, that we were in a meeting and Sherry called. And on the answering machine, she read off a list of things that were obviously constructed for her to read. And at the end of that, somewhere toward the end, she would be writing later to Doris. Well, it is identical listing. And so her affidavit just says that she had written that letter and they had included the letter to the court. Well, it is so full of errors that I cannot believe, number one, that she wrote it, and number two, it has been very carefully covered over by what's in the letter, the cover letter, which really doesn't state anything except she's over 18 and this is the letter she wrote. So that should be noted. And if you would read that affidavit, then we can get on with our meeting. It's patriotic time. We are digging out, people. We've got some exciting things happening and some really, really nerve-wracking things happening. But I want you to note that over here, you'll recognize the flowers from our Beau Greitz escapades with our flags and party. The Statue of Liberty was left with Dorma by Phyllis Cantrell as a gift. The American Eagles speak for themselves. But the Imperial Eagle on the other end is your logos. That is the King of the Eagles. That's our eagle. And I just wanted to share that with you. Very good.
Okay, this is an affidavit of Rod Enns in support of request for receivership contained in second amended complaint. Is Rod Enns, also known as Rodney Taylor Entz, being first duly sworn, deposes and says, number one, affiant served as director and president of Phoenix Institute for Research and Education, Incorporated, and Nevada Corporation, hereinafter Phoenix, for 2.5 years. Affiant's engagement as director and president arose in the following manner. Doris and Eddie Joe Ecker, hereafter Ecker, acting without themselves over having been elected by any shareholder of Phoenix, appointed affiant to the directorship and president posts, claiming lawful authority to do so. Number three, no stock was issued and no shareholders' meetings were held. That's not true. Four, from the time of affiant's arrival...
Actually, both are true. There are no stockholders.
There were some meetings held, though.
There were a lot of meetings held.
Number four. From the time of Affiant's arrival in Tehachapi, California, around June 28, 1992, Affiant was engaged in looking after land leased by Eddie Joe Ecker in his personal capacity. The expenses for the operation of the land leased by Eddie Joe Ecker were paid from funds belonging to Phoenix Institute. Five. During Affiant's tenure as president and director, and both before and after Affiant's tenure, Phoenix never had a shareholders' meeting. Six, Phoenix has never issued any stock. Seven, Affiant witnessed meetings of Chila's adherents with Eddie Joe Ecker and Doris Ecker. When she was acting...
I wonder what they think Chila means. Chila is simply student.
Yeah. They think it means adherence. With Eddie Joe Ecker and Doris Ecker.
Well, they're not good students.
No. When she was acting as a purported officer and director of Phoenix, and when she was purportedly acting as scribe for an entity known as Hatan, Commander-in-Chief of the Intergalactic Space Federation Fleet Earth Project Transition.
I'm glad to have that confirmation, because in my ongoing, right now, you nice people, I am in personal contact with George Bush and others. And they don't have any problem with my position as commander of the Phoenix in the Galactic Federation. I wonder why Mr. Entz has so much problem with it, and why even Mr. Greitz, our beloved colonel, wants to refer to me as a reptilian god. Well, he knows better than that, too. By his own words, he said, I didn't even resemble anything reptilian except my chameleon colors when I suggested that you not waste your votes because he couldn't win. Nobody has trouble with me. They're not having trouble with accepting me in Greece, in Egypt, not even in Libya, not even in Iraq. Not even in Washington, D.C. I wonder why Mr. Entz has such trouble with it. And I believe that we write quite a lot of stuff, so purported scribe is really kind of silly. She does something. And you don't have to have wires to receive anymore. Remember the old wireless? So, come on, get with it. I don't show up in person because there is an extraterrestrial law that would throw anyone into prison, isolation, quarantine, if you touched me. It's called a close encounter. So this is close as I'm going to get. And I hear Rick laughing because he's saying, thank you, God. We got enough going. Go on, please.
Doris Ecker also claimed to speak for other extraterrestrial entities, including God, Atan, and Jesus Christ, Isu, Emmanuel, or Sananda. Number 8. During Affiant's tenure as president and director, both Affiant and other directors appointed by Doris and Eddie Joe Ecker attempted to get from Eddie Joe Ecker, who has always served as treasurer, information that would enable Affiant and the other members of the board to become aware of the financial status of Phoenix. But those efforts were consistently thwarted by Eddie Joe and Doris Ecker.
Now, I'm going to interrupt again because these are the things that have to be rebutted. And I want you to make a note too, EJ, because of the case involved. On one occasion, after a board meeting, Mr. Christie called and said that Mr. Entz and Mr. Cleary had made a conference call to him, and they were demanding all of the records, books, etc. of the Phoenix Institute Corporation. And when they didn't get those, they did manage to, and once again, it's interesting where they would have gotten that information, and I'll let it go because, it's just not the time to discuss where they got it. But they did have Phoenix Institute Corporation books, and they were in Princeton's editing room, and they were poring over them like magpies with their little magnifying glasses to find whatever they could find, and someone walked in and discovered them. So it was an interesting day that day also. So go on, please.
Eddie Joe Ecker always insisted that everything was all right and that it was important for the affairs of the Institute to remain secret for the personal privacy of the investors.
Now, every piece of paper that went forth or has been ordered forth in court, payments for storage of gold, that private, things that are to be in camera, unauthorized, uncertified depositions, used out of context, everything so far private, including these affidavits, are put into packages and are sent out to everyone on the mailing list. Millers can be attestments to that. How many of you want everything about your private business sent around to the George Green crew? Well, EJ and Doris both stood before the court and said, we will not divulge that under penalty of prison. And actually, there isn't anything to divulge anyway, is there? Because under corporate laws, they can't require that. They can just put you through hell up until that day when you can make that statement. So go on, please.
Doris Ecker, speaking as Hatan, reiterated that everything done by Eddie Joe Ecker was always meticulously honest. Number nine. This secrecy was maintained even from the board of directors and from the investors.
I think you can see why.
Eddie Joe Ecker insisted that the directors be kept in ignorance of all matters except what Eddie Joe Ecker presented to them. 10. One investor who tried to get her money back was Betty Tootin, a retired school teacher, who had paid in about $400,000, which represented her life savings. Eddie Joe Ecker said the most he could pay was $2,000. 11. Other directors joined with Affiant in attempts to find out what Eddie Joe Ecker had done with the money of the Institute.
Let's go back to that $2,000. Dorma wasn't even to that meeting. Betty Tootin was. What Mr. Ecker said was, today I could probably give you $2,000. Then they made every effort to work out some payment scale, some payment program. And no, thank you. She wanted all of it pulled out right then, immediately. So now go on, please.
Number 11. Other directors joined with Affiant in attempts to find out what Eddie Joe Ecker had done with the money of the Institute. But
well, he said it. The major part of it was going to him at that farm, that he was botching, and that he had gone to another lender and had privately made arrangements and had gotten some industrial equipment or some farming equipment, which he took with him after he had also gotten a note regarding the money from the Institute. He said his mother loaned it to him, so it was personal. And he wanted to handle it that way for his privacy. You would be appalled at what was going into that farm every month. And as far as Mr. Ford is concerned, at the time that Mr. Ford put some money in, George Green borrowed out $150,000 cash of the Institute and took the $350,000, now well over $400,000 worth of gold. And he did it with a promissory note. We're always being thrown in the promissory notes. George Green didn't have a side agreement with any promissory note. And he doesn't pay. And these people put their very reputations on the line with this kind of garbage and put it into the courts. Go on, please.
Other directors who tried to get information on where the money was and what had been done with it were Reverend Ed Cleary and Mitch Jaffe. We were told that A. Joe Ecker was the treasurer and what was done with the money and where it went was none of our business.
That was because Mitch Jaffe said, well, I have to know what, because I have to tell these people who call something. What people? Well, people who inquire about the business of the Institute. Why would you do that, Mr. Jaffe? Well, I have to tell them something. What would you tell them? Well, what we spend the money on and who puts it in and, oh, really? Oh, really? Go on.
We were told that Eddie Joe Ecker was the treasurer and what was done with the money and where it went was none of our business. Eddie Joe Ecker was in total control and there was no way we could find to break that control. Affiant and other directors who wished to find out what had happened to the money ultimately resigned in frustration. Number 12. The method of financial...
Resigned in frustration?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Terminated with prejudice might be closer.
They weren't even terminated. Remember, they finally volunteered to quit. After threatening, if they try to get rid of us, we'll get them. Go on.
Number 12. The method of financial dealings of Phoenix Institute Ecker was supposed to be that an investor would pay his money to Phoenix. Phoenix would purportedly use the money to buy gold, and the investor would be given a demand promissory note for the amount of his payment that was supposedly secured by a certain number of ounces of gold calculated at the spot market price when the money was paid over. 13. However, Eddie Joe Ecker, Phoenix, remained in control of all the gold. Money was borrowed by Eddie Joe Ecker on the security of the gold. And
right, and so Mr. Ecker didn't have control of it, did he? The bank had control of it. And thank goodness still does.
And used as he saw fit. One or more airplanes were bought with this money.
Now that is really a good one.
Yeah. I'd like to see those.
Probably so would Mr. Ecker.
I'd like to go for a ride. A bomb shelter was constructed in the basement of the house of Eddie Joe Ecker's stepson with the money. Large sums were spent in publishing the weekly newspaper Phoenix Liberator, later called Contact. Large sums were spent on litigation. Further sums were spent in efforts to produce agricultural products. None of these ventures produced a positive cash flow, but rather were all money losers.
Oh my, really?
14. Certain of the employees of Phoenix were given instructions by Eddie Joe Ecker on how to move corporate records around so as to prevent governmental agencies and lawyers from getting hold of them. 60 or more corporations were formed by the Eckers and used for this purpose. Doris Ecker served as secretary and Eddie Joe Ecker served as president and treasurer. 15. Affiant was unable to find out which of these corporations harbored what funds or what the funds were used for. All corporations were controlled by Eddie Joe and Doris Ecker. 16. Affiant became particularly concerned about the financial status of the investor's money.
When sure, he did.
When Affiant learned that everybody found out he was stealing. No. That's not in there.
That's pretty good.
16A. Margin calls were made by the gold depositories indicating that over 90% of the value of the gold that was supposed to secure the investor's money had been borrowed and spent by Eddie Joe Ecker without his ever obtaining prior approval of the board or prior approval of the investors for so jeopardizing their security.
There were no investors. That's number one. Number two, how would he know? Number three, you are only talking about one little segment of the overall program. And that was agreed by Sherry, and she had already met one margin call. She had put money into the Institute, pulled it right back out, put it into her own personal corporations, and that was for meeting calls and things like that. Betty's funds happened to have been in that same fund. Now, when it came time to handle that, Sherry was very happy, very agreeable, and she said, "Let me think about it." And that was the end of it. She and Betty Tootin then went off of the list of contacts. They changed the phone number. They would not accept calls. They would not accept faxes. And they would not accept letters. And this is from their own corporation, president, treasurer, and secretary. And finally, those corporations were abandoned. The accounts were stripped without any recognition, any knowledge, any notification. That is fine. That's what was chosen to be done, and then the word comes back, "I don't want anything to do with that or them anymore." If you have a corporation and you have a president, a secretary, and a treasurer, which you must have, and they are on the board of directors, you are in serious trouble. If your records get screwed up. And it's not all right to say, "Oh, well, I just didn't know," when it involves somebody else. So go on, please.
Rights to the gold were lost because of the inability of Eddie Joe Ecker, Phoenix, to pay the debts incurred from Ecker's borrowings on the investor's gold. B. Any investor who tried to obtain payment on his demand promissory notes was accused of trying to bring the institute down, and several were sued at further expense and expenditure of the investor's own money. The investors who tried to collect their notes were attacked and called the enemy and defamed and vilified. C. Eddie Joe Ecker admitted that the institute was unable to pay its debts as they fell due. The institute was therefore insolvent.
The institute was not insolvent, and I believe all of you will notice that the bills are paid. Those major debts on the loans have not even matured. So what are they talking about?
D. Only Eddie Joe Ecker knew what had been done with the money or where any assets of the investors were located, and he refused to divulge the existence and location of any assets, even to the purported directors of the institute. 17. It was when Affiant persisted in his efforts to get to the bottom of the financial dealings of Phoenix Institute, the corporation of which he was purportedly the president, that Affiant was forced out by the Eckers in September 1995 without ever having succeeded in obtaining from the Eckers information that would enable the preparation of the balance sheet.
Check the forced out.
That's interesting because he said earlier how he quit in frustration. Which is it? 18. Based upon Affiant's experience as a purported officer director of Phoenix Institute, Affiant believes that the institute is insolvent and unable to pay its debts as they fell due. Now, if he didn't have any knowledge of the institute's financial status, how could he make such a statement?
Another interesting observation.
19. The only available means of which Affiant is aware to put an end to the practices of the Eckers Phoenix in dissipating large sums of other people's money is a receivership and or criminal proceedings for larceny after trust, obtaining money under false pretenses, running a Ponzi scheme, using the mails to defraud, violation of SEC regulations, and failure to account for money had and received. 20. Affiant is informed and believes that the Eckers have their bags packed and stored in the crawl space under their residence. Preparatory
they did that in their spare time.
Preparatory to fleeing the country with whatever assets they may have accumulated. Signed, Rod Enns.
Thank you. And yet here this is under penalty of perjury. When we started this whole thing, it was determined that I, Hatton, would act as CEO of the Phoenix Institute. Mr. Green laid forth the plan for this, quote, Ponzi, end quote, scheme. So obviously he felt differently than others felt about it. So without going into that further, I don't care whether you believe I exist or not. Any funds that were loaned to the Institute came because people believed in what I stand for. And if they came to believe in their awakening, as Betty Tootin says, and leaves poor Margie programmed, I am responsible. And I have not misled you. And you're going to see before the end of this year, I believe, if we can hold the world together long enough, that we have been worthy of that faith and trust. We only need to make it another month or two while processing takes place. We've already got some major, major clearances, and there are some interesting things that have happened that even Rick doesn't know about, I don't think, perhaps. We're working with some old friends from 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and they know ones who can now probably push through in Europe what we need to have done. And there are going to be some moaning, groaning politicians around, so don't go taunting anybody. But it's going to come down, and it's going to come down big. More than your little calculators can count. So let us not worry about Hatton. Let's not worry about these interplays as far as getting so distressed that all you want to do is go in the corner and say, to hell with everybody. I don't need any more of this. Because we're very near to opening the floodgates that may even allow some turnaround in your own nation. You're ruled by the most unethical, immoral people on the face of the globe. And we're going to have to remind you, we're going to have to refresh your memories about who some of these people are, the Bilderbergs, the Trilateralists, the 300, the 16, if Ron wants to hang on to that one. There are some powerful people in the world, and they put on a nice, good, patriotic front, just like Colonel Brights, the consummate patriot and warrior. These people believe in what they're doing. Special Forces is an MK Ultra trauma training program. These men can walk through fire. He didn't like it because I was a cowardly warrior. What kind of a warrior are you? Well, I'm the kind that wins. And I don't bloodlet. But I'm tired of people sucking our blood away from us while we are trying our very best 24 hours a day to get these transactions settled. And I'm not going to therefore tell you who all we're dealing with, because they don't need it. One over in Europe, you know, calls somebody that one knows, that this one knows, and the other one knows, and oh, I've known that one for 25 years. Only to find out that one was president of Nguyen Bank. You know, one of the chief ripper-offers of the world. This is an admiral. And Rick and EJ are talking to this admiral, you know, all the way around from Athens, Greece to Virginia to the bedroom. And he's saying, oh, well, I just can't tell you guys. I'm 77 years old. I just can't get into this because I don't have time. It'll take you 20, 25 years to clear up enough of this legal mess, even if you have paperwork. Oh, I don't think so. All that's been cleared up, Admiral Yates. Oh, well, I'm too old. I bet he is, and I'll bet you there wasn't a 10-second break in that phone line before he was on the line to George Bush, who was also sitting with my letter in hand and my program to offer him. We went through this once before at Camp David. They don't have any trouble believing I'm real. It's just you. And it's Dorma, so we'll just move on by that. Maybe we'll bring our meeting to a close and EJ read at least part of this. We don't have to read all the stuff about the Bilderbergs. But the Bilderbergs just had a meeting in Canada. And it was in May. And this time, Mr. Tucker from Spotlight raised enough hell with the local press because Conrad Black, remember our old buddy Conrad Black that we wrote about, at least, you know, almost a journal on this man, was the host. And this time, the Canadian paper, The Star, really got interested. And it kind of broke them open, and it was a little bit, it was not a pleasant meeting this year. But most readers who come in, especially now, some still don't have any idea what you mean when you say Bilderberger or Trilateral Commission. Your president and others have said, fortunately, if the citizens knew what we had done, they would lynch us on the spot. But the citizens have no more than a 4-year memory span in any event. And this is what's been your downfall. This is why they have been able to garner control. And because you're against that type of government does not mean that you are unpatriotic as an American citizen. Let's know the difference. Let's know, please, the difference.
This is from today's writing, Sunday, June the 30th, 1996, heading Chaos in High Places. No chaos is present at the Bilderberg meetings. No chaos is present at the planning meetings of any of the elite world of would-be kings. Chaos is pronounced as your penalty for existing as you reach the vortex of your cycle to truth or consequences. I'm going to begin this writing by asking you who have an inquiring mind and like to acquire good reference books and elite listings to get Who's Who of the Elite.
This one. I brought it once before. Brent's familiar with it. This is the best list of reference names anywhere. This was done last year, 1995. It'll be as up to date as any you're probably going to get. Never mind reading the prices and things.
There'll be a notice in the newspaper how to get it. The book lists Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commissions, and Skull and Bones Society members as well as Bilderberg members. And readers, get ready for a shock as you find every notable name you thought you never wanted to know about listed within.